And welcome to the Penobscot Bay Report and Gulf of Maine Monitor.
It's August 30th, 2007.
Joining us by phone now is Dave Thompson, the Fundy Baykeeper, and I've been explaining a little bit about the idea of baykeeper, but not being one, I hope that you'll be able to enlighten us into some of that. So welcome to the show, Dave.
Well, thank you.
Just for starters, perhaps, let us know how you as an individual decided to become a baykeeper.
I guess I had been sort of working as a volunteer on and occasionally on projects with the marine environment in the Bay of Fundy for some time, and also other environmental issues. And the opportunity came along to get a program going here in the Bay of Fundy, which was sorely needed. So, you know, we just happened to be there and decided that, you know, we had the time to do it, and it was... project was sponsored here, of course, by the Conservation Council of New Brunswick, so we're sort of under the wing of that, which is the largest environmental group in the province. Although we get no funding from the Conservation Council, we find the money from our own budgets and that sort of thing.
Well, really? Well, then that does give you a quite an autonomy of decision-making, then.
Well, within the framework and principles, I guess, of the Waterkeeper Alliance, I guess we just work on so many different things here, everything from the matter of ocean litter, the effects of industry and marine activities like aquaculture on the Bay of Fundy. We were involved in the setting up the first marine protected area in the Bay of Fundy, which was just recently proclaimed, and right now we're going to prepare to intervene in a number of large marine energy projects in the Bay of Fundy.
Well, let's go over some of these topics that you've described there, because that's quite a stack of them. First off, aquaculture. One of the issues with aquaculture we've had here has been the waste products, the fish manure type waste. But evidently, there's a lot of other wastes.
Well, I guess there are discharges of almost everything from aquaculture sites. These open cages have presented big problems in the Bay of Fundy as they broadcast, I guess, basically everything that goes into them and more out of them. In New Brunswick here, we had a huge problem where the industry just mushroomed from nothing over a period of 10 or 15 years, and almost every beach in the lower Bay of Fundy was a dumping ground for old material. It's old broken cages, old nets, mooring blocks, you name it, it was there.
Not just a little bit, then?
No, we're talking about hundreds of tons, and we're talking on some areas. I think there was one or two locations cleaned up, where there were probably 100 tons of material at each location. All kinds of styrofoam used as flotation, just let loose in the marine environment and that sort of thing. I guess that's been a real problem around the Bay of Fundy. We're coming to grips with this aquaculture industrial debris situation after about 4 years' work on it now, and then we finally convinced the government of New Brunswick to ticket all these large pieces of debris, and they've put out a catalog, and where they can be identified, the owners are being asked now to come and remove them, and if they don't, they'll be cleaned up.
Now, this sounds like it's more than just an eyesore. I can imagine styrofoam slowly pounding into tinier and tinier pellets till finally there are these indigestible little lumps that filter feeders can eat.
Well, exactly, and before it goes even down that far, even being out in the boat yesterday, we picked up several large chunks, 4 or 5 feet long and a couple of feet square, as well as some of these bullet types that they put in the aquaculture rings. And whenever we find this stuff floating on the bay, we invariably see birds around it or sitting on it and looking at it and feeding on it. We don't know why they do, but the only thing we know is when, we usually encounter it, we see that. And almost every piece we pick up is, full of bird peck marks. And it's terrible for people doing beach cleanups because, of course, one of these chunks can be, thousands of small chunks as it's beat against the the rocks on the beach and breaks up and that kind of thing. So really, I think we're going to work towards getting styrofoam out of the marine environment. You know, it certainly, you know, it shouldn't go into products anymore in the marine environment. There are other things which, you know, can meet the needs that styrofoam currently is.
Can I assume then that it's not only aquaculture styrofoam, but also the cup and all the other myriad packing situations?
Oh, it is, but those big chunks are the worst, you know, are far worse, and because they're just much more material. And we've really, I guess, with our work on smaller litter, we've probably reduced the ocean litter. But many people remarked this summer how little there was in the Bay of Fundy of just general waste that's being thrown in and dumping, you know, fast food materials and the remains from people's cabins on boats and that sort of thing. You know, I'm just suggesting that perhaps, you know, in the course of our work, we've reduced that maybe 90% in the last few years.
Quite a significant accomplishment. Now, apparently a lot of this, then, you've got to examine shores and inshore waters around your area of concern, which I understand is a part of Passamaquoddy Bay. Can you describe a little bit about the environment there and how you travel about to look over these waters?
Well, we have a 20-foot launch, and it's got a energy-efficient motor, and we're out regularly patrolling around. You know, certainly in the from the late spring to the early autumn months, and we cover a lot of ground. I mean, we cover I don't know how many miles of shoreline there are. There are many, many dozens of islands, large and small, and you know, a number of significant river estuaries as well. But if we do just a straight line along the coast from, maybe St. Martin's east of St. John to the main border, we'd have, you know, over 70 miles of a straight line of coast. Of course, that makes many, many hundreds of miles if we, you know, follow the areas, the coast and the islands, you know, sweep around.
Hmm. And can you describe what it means to do a patrol? Is it does people on the shore and fishermen and so on get along with that, or they go, oh my gosh, here's another big brother peeping at us?
No, I think people want this. I mean certainly the fishing industry and people along the coast have been under attack from the way that the Bay of Fundy's been handled, particularly from these large industrial projects, and certainly the ones that are being proposed now, both the terminals in the St. Croix estuary on the main side of the border, and also all the activity in St. John related to the Irving Enterprises and the operation of that port. Certainly ship strikes for whales has been a big problem at the Bay of Fundy. And if the proposal for this new oil refinery in St. John, which is an Irving refinery, goes ahead, and if these LNG terminals go ahead, both the ones in Maine and Irving's, which is already under construction, you know, it'll double the number of ships using the Bay of Fundy. And, you know, possibility of is very strong of eventually eliminating the right whale population from ship strikes. And they've adjusted the shipping channels to their feeding grounds, but of course they change themselves over time, the whales, and everyone doesn't eat in the same restaurant at the same time, as you can well imagine.
Right then.
And so you know, there are strikes every year, and you just can't double the number of ship traffic in the Bay of Fundy. And of course this ship traffic as well interferes with commercial fishing, you know, as the aquaculture industry has done. I mean, none of these industries that they want to put in the marine environment is placed somewhere where there isn't someone already using the marine environment there. All this marine environment is used for commercial fishing, and in the Bay of Fundy here, you know, many of these small communities and families have been depending on these areas for many years. And if you happen to put docks and terminals there or aquaculture sites, what you're doing is pushing out the self-sufficient people and many of the same families who have worked that that piece of ocean and sea bottom, you know, maybe for several generations of their family or more.
Well, you know, that is a very similar issue, or a very similar issue was raised in Penobscot Bay with the proposal for a liquid natural gas port at Searsport at the very head of the bay. And it would have required about half of the bay's lobstermen to get out of the water, get out of the, go back to port at least three times a week.
So, I mean, what if a group of fishermen or coastal residents came along and said, you know, somewhere, well, for instance, at Irving's Oils Terminals in St. John, say that we want to, create a marine park there, so get your oil terminal out of there. We don't want it anymore. What do you think the government would do in that case?
Well, in our case, Penobscot Bay, well, it kind of worked. The governor said he would. He really wanted a sense of the people of the area, whether they wanted or disliked the idea of a liquid natural gas port, because there was so much opposition for so many quarters. And when he got this resounding thumbs down, he claims to have simply decreed the government would abandon any efforts to license a liquid natural gas plant there.
People, when they get together, communities and citizens, you know, can accomplish things. I mean, you have to work awful hard, but it can be done. And I mean, we're seeing results certainly in the Bay of Fundy here. I mean, we have the first inshore marine protected area now in the Bay of Fundy in the Musquash Estuary, and after I guess 7 years or nearly 8 years of work by the Conservation Council and Baykeeper, that it's been proclaimed this spring.
Let's go into that. And by the way, folks, we're listening to David Thompson, Fundy Baykeeper, who's graciously sharing us some of his time to explain some of the goings-on up there in the Bay of Fundy. Well, go ahead then, because marine protected areas have been politically terrible footballs here in the States.
Well, I think, before one's even suggested or nominated, you have to, get the support of the local communities around it. And, we did that to begin with. We went to the local communities and the fishermen's associations, and, they were, on board from the start. And then we nominated the area and carried out all the research there with their full support. Of course, what's been happening in the Bay of Fundy with all this industrialization is, these small fishing communities and those who make their livelihood and have for generations have virtually been pushed out, by the industrialization of the Bay of Fundy. So, they were very happy when we started to make moves towards setting up this marine protected area.
So, in a way, this makes it it sort of bars heavy industry from that estuary.
Well, it puts up a fence. Yeah, but the problem is, one of the problems in finding areas for marine protected areas, you have to try and locate somewhere that isn't already developed, and that's not easy nowadays. And the Musquash Estuary, formerly we had defended it, the Conservation Council, going back some years, several times from industrial development. There was a proposal to put an oil unloading terminal there, to dredge it out for a coal port, another liquefied natural gas terminal some 25 years ago, and so it wasn't an area that was just sitting there and hadn't been looked at by industrial developers before. It had, but we had either successfully fought off those projects, or they had fallen because they have their own industrial or financial merit, we felt that that when legislation was brought in Canada under the Fisheries Act that made the framework for the setup of marine protected areas, we already knew about Musquash. The other interesting thing about Musquash is that it has quite a lot of salt marsh there. In fact, it's the only large salt marsh in the lower part of the Bay of Fundy.
In fact, could you give us a quick description of where exactly the Musquash estuary is related to, say, Passamaquoddy Bay?
Well, it's between a feature called Point Lepreau and St. John, about halfway. So that would put it between St. John and Passamaquoddy Bay.
Okay.
And as I mentioned, when you first approached it, we were looking at salt marshes, but then we found out a lot more about it. Of course, salt marshes are oftentimes the fertilizer of the inshore waters or the estuaries, that sort of thing. They provide a lot of nutrients and detritus as the big tides cover the marshes and then retreat into the bay. So it starts a whole food chain energy situation. And in the Bay of Fundy, over 85% of the salt marsh had been lost. It had been developed over time. Going way back, a lot of it had been diked up for farms, and then it had just been infilled for building on. Gosh, at the end of it, even groups like Ducks Unlimited were diking it up for freshwater impoundments for ducks and that sort of thing. But anyway, over the years, a terrible lot of this crucial habitat to the food web of the bay had disappeared. So we were looking at musquash primarily for that, but then we began to find out all kinds of other things about musquash.
Well, what exactly is protected now in musquash? You say the fishermen don't have a challenge with it being protected. Does that mean that they are still allowed to fish there?
Certain types of fishing, ways of fishing, I guess I would say. There are restrictions on drag fishing gear in the area, but set fishing gear such as lobster traps and that sort of thing are permissible, but seabed dragging is out. No one's allowed to do any kind of dredging in the area now. There's no infilling along the shore, which is permitted. Anything that would upset the seabed or the benthic community there or the geology of the area as well. We've invited the Nature Conservancy of Canada in, and they're buying up the upland surrounding the area because, of course, if you're in a nearshore marine protected area and you just protect the marshes and beaches and intertidal area and waters and seabed, that doesn't prevent someone from coming along and building a pulp mill on shore or clear cutting or starting a mine. So we have a Nature Conservancy of Canada there now beginning to acquire a lot of the upland around the estuary, and so that's coming along quite well.
Well, that's a very important accomplishment. That is to get the land conservation and marine conservation people working holistically to protect, as you say, an entire little bioregion.
Yeah. Well, this particular estuary as well. If someone looked at it, they'd say, well, there's not a lot of endangered species there, or nothing particularly unique. But what it does, the unique thing is that it isn't developed and hasn't been, and is about the only major estuary along the coast, or the only one we know of that hasn't. And so therefore we have the last one, and within that estuary we find all the species, both marine and bird species, benthic species that are everywhere in the Bay of Fundy or anywhere at some time in the year, because if we look at the top of the estuary, it consists of extensive salt marshes, and then we get down to big intertidal mudflat areas. We are then down to estuary and harbor-type habitats, and finally out to islands and headlands, with 150-foot high cliffs that are buffeted by, the ocean waves of the Bay of Fundy and deep water. So it encapsulates, within only, from the outer boundaries of the estuary to the head of the estuary, it's only about 10 miles, and there's only about 35 square miles in the estuary, but it encapsulates, all those different habitats and environments, and at some time in the year hosts every species in the Bay of Fundy.
Now, do you take your vessel up there on monitoring or patrols?
Yes, we do. But there are in the very upper part of the estuary, there are prohibitions on vessel use, motorized vessel use, and we would patrol the upper parts by kayak or rowboat. We do have an annual canoe kayak paddle down there, which we had around the end of July this year. We've had it for 4 or 5 years, and where people paddle some 7 miles from the head of the estuary to a place called Black Beach, which has sort of a unique black sandy beach.
Well, as you say, that must be wonderfully unique. One of the facts, as you say, is to go through an area like that and not be besieged with the sounds of industry and mechanized
well, it is, and the fishermen are very thankful that that this industrialization that's occurring, you know, in the St. John area can't expand, you know, down there now into that area, which is prime, you know, lobster fishing ground right off the mouth of the estuary and, mm-hmm. and in the lower part of the estuary. And so I think everyone is very happy. But one of the things I guess the Baykeeper is going to get more. We're involved in, of course, a lot of public education, and we regularly take people out on our small boat, you know. And of course, when people go out in the summertime, they invariably, you know, see all the marine mammals, whether it happens to be, you know, whales or porpoises or seals or whatever, and whatever birds there are. So I think a really important, you know, work we do is just take people out when we're doing our work so they can actually see what's out there and what we're doing and what the marine debris situation is and see, you know, fishing going on firsthand, you know, whether it be from herring weirs or you know, lobster fishing or other kinds of fishing. And, you know, people just see what's going on firsthand. I think education is important. But we're going to perhaps in the next few years change our focus more towards these big energy projects that are being proposed. Of course, I guess everyone's familiar with the Irving Group of companies and many of their activities, but there's a big new refinery proposed. In fact, it'll be the first refinery in North America in 25 years at St. John, and Irving, of course, already has a 350,000 barrel a day refinery there, which refined products loaded on tankers and mostly taken, you know, to New England ports. But anyway, this new refinery will double ship traffic in the Bay of Fundy because all of the oil, you know, will basically be exported by tanker from that, and very little for domestic consumption through pipelines and rails. Also, with this LNG terminal that's going to be built, there'll be a lot more tanker traffic in the Bay of Fundy.
Oh, so this is in addition to the LNG proposals?
Yes, the refinery is an addition. The refinery is a proposal now where the Irving LNG terminal, which is built in conjunction with a multinational called Repsol, it's under construction. It's half built.
Now, this brings in another player that's very important around the bay, and that is the Department of Fisheries and Oceans and whatever the provincial authority is. How do you interact with them, and how are they if you say you're giving them an informal scorecard?
Well, it depends, I guess. We certainly work with them and take information to them, you know, for legal enforcement. And occasionally, we may go out on a boat with them. But the government presence or enforcement, you know, just the research has been much reduced over the years. And unfortunately, a lot of government money has gone into, you know, commercial research and research into aquaculture of salmon and now aquaculture, possible aquaculture of other species and that sort of thing. And we feel that, you know, that the money and the work of the federal government here is too... you know, do ocean research. I mean, they shouldn't be getting into, you know, research for you know, commercial ventures and that sort of thing. The most important thing is preserving and restoring the marine environment and its fish stocks. And that's, you know, where we feel the priority should go. But I must mention that that there are other large energy projects. I think many people, you know, don't know about these things, you know, once we get away from the Bay of Fundy and New Brunswick. But they're also proposing now to build another nuclear generating station along the Bay of Fundy coast, which we're very concerned about.
Now, would that also be in the Point Lepreau area?
It would be in the Point Lepreau area. And of course, the first station has been a financial failure, and they're having to shut it down now to rebuild it. There's a lot of information that we don't know about yet on the effects of the Bay of Fundy, but we do know that there are huge intakes, 12 feet in diameter, which, you know, pump seawater in and out of the plant to the steam condensers. cancer.
With a huge planktonic mortality, I'd have to assume, in fish eggs and larvae.
Well, one can speculate that, but, you know, we just can't get any information. We can't get a handle on that. We speculate that. And then, to our amazement, there was an aquaculture site approved right in front of the outfall of that nuclear generating station a few years ago.
Not for a food item, would it be?
For a food item. And when we asked at a public information meeting about a year ago, myself and another baykeeper volunteer, we were told that they didn't check the salmon for radiation when they were being marketed.
Well, that was very circumspect of them. My gosh.
It's amazing. I mean, and you can get away with a lot of stuff in New Brunswick here in the Bay of Fundy on the Canadian side that would be very difficult to set up an LNG terminal, or more difficult on the American side. I mean, there are these proposals now in Maine, which we're also very concerned about, just below Calais and between there and Lubeck, Maine. There are two active proposals and another proposal. And you know, we're very concerned about those. I mean, the tanker traffic into those would interrupt fishing and present a whole situation to local communities and economies around the islands of Deer Island, Campobello, Grand Manan, and town of St. Andrews. That whole area, whole area depends upon you know, Bay of Fundy ecotourism and commercial fishing.
And now, has Fundy Baykeeper been contributing perhaps comments or concerns to the Americans and in their licensing?
Well, we've been working through the Save Bass Macquarie Bay committee, which is a committee of you know, a whole bunch of different groups and you know, municipalities, people living around the Passamaquoddy Bay area. So we've been working with them, and we've been taking people out to see the sites and doing monitoring of the existing environment around there. You know, we've been doing that, I guess, for the past two or three years, you know, as well as, you know, just educating visitors to the area who come, you know, to enjoy the naturalness of the area and, you know, go see, you know, the Bay of Fundy on tours and go see the whales and that sort of thing.
So in some ways, you're helping support the sort of a plethora of small nature-based or nature-dependent industries as opposed to these big industrial behemoths.
Well, this is what's making the real long-term jobs for people in this area, and what supported the area for so long, and which has the potential to in the future. I mean, it doesn't depend on the whims of you know, some company for somewhere else, and some of these things create very little jobs anyway. I mean, the LNG terminals you know, will create less than 100 jobs apiece. Of course, that's not construction, but once they're operating, I mean, the job creation potential. And to just use the Canadian side of the Bay of Fundy, the New Brunswick side, as a port of convenience for industries which aren't acceptable elsewhere, and where the energy isn't being used you know, in New Brunswick or for that matter you know, in nearby Maine, just to you know, situate these industries here because they're so difficult to situate where the energy is being used. I mean, it's not really right. I mean, if we build a, you know, even an environmentally friendly type of plant here, maybe, let's say, a large wind farm to export energy to, you know, southern New England or something, you know, you still have to have these power lines through the woods, and if it's a pipeline, you have to cross through salmon spawning rivers and all those kinds of things along the way. And you have line loss. I mean, you know, ideally, if we're going to have a 22nd century, you know, at least for humankind on the planet, then we've got to, you know, be producing the energy nearby to where we consume it. Now, none of these big energy projects, the proposed nuclear reactor, the LNG terminals, the oil refinery, none of them are using, you know, natural resources from the Bay of Fundy or from New Brunswick here. I mean, they're bringing in oil from, I guess, everywhere, the Middle East, or brokering it here and then piping it, you know, piping it south. The same thing goes with the LNG. The same thing goes with the nuclear power. I mean, you're mining uranium somewhere, but nowhere in eastern Canada, and just you know, again, upgrading it or brokering it here and sending it off where there's no need for power here. And at the same time, we're cutting down thousands of acres of woodlands for these, transmission corridors, whether it's pipelines or whether it's electrical towers. We're experiencing, huge losses, line losses of electricity along the way. Maybe, 10, 15, or 20% of the electricity is lost by the time it gets to where it's going to be used. So, what we're doing here is jeopardizing this very important Bay of Fundy. And all the marine aspects of it and the surrounding shorelands, because people, or industries who are using huge amounts of energy, don't want the production facilities in their own area.
Hmm. We're speaking with David Thompson, Fundy Baykeeper. Now, there's been several attempts to create a Penobscot Baykeeper, and sometimes it's kind of had challenge over organizing things on all sides of the bay where there are different economies and different cultures. Now,
yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about how you decided how much of the Bay of Fundy to work on, and would that perhaps be a useful model?
We decided to probably work on what we were physically capable of doing. I mean, we operate our project our boat, and whatever that costs through dockage fees and fuel use and insurance, our office, our telephones, our computers, everything on we probably operate on about half of the salary of a typical salary of a Canadian government employee. That's our budget for the year.
Wow.
And so, people really have to want to do it. You have to have people to assist with things, and you have to have staff that are really committed to the environment and to work for the wages and live off them that are there for the project. But different Waterkeeper projects were part of the Waterkeeper Alliance, which you're very familiar with, I'm sure.
Right.
And many projects in many places are different, and I think people really have to look at the scope of what they can take on. In some cases, some of these Waterkeeper projects are in big cities. We have the Hudson River Waterkeeper, or we have the San Francisco Bay Waterkeeper,
New York, New Jersey Harborkeeper.
Urban areas where there are more opportunities for support, but yet very complex problems. And in other places, we have them in very rural areas. In some cases, the Waterkeeper is only looking after a small, a very small river or stream or lake or something. So it can be anything. It can be what the community decides to become a member of Waterkeeper and applies, and they can decide the scope of what they want to do. And I don't think that initially people should take on more than they can handle.
Hmm. Well, then
maybe they can take on even their own local harbor, or if there's a small, river that has problems nearby, or has lost its fish population, or needs to be protected from future industrial development. The scope of the size of the project. People should, just take on. Don't bite off more than you can chew.
Well, okay. Well, we're talking with David Thompson, who's bit off a good chunk of the Bay of Fundy there. Now, does your area of interest extend all the way down to Grand Manan?
Yes, and we've done work on Grand Manan, but we don't regularly patrol the Grand Manan in the boat. But if needs be, we'll go over to the island. But most of the work. Obviously we can't do everything. We have a huge industrial port situation in St. John. We have, all this work that we've been doing on the aquaculture industry. We have, these new projects coming in. We have, just general patrols and surveillance that we do. We're not everywhere all the time, but I think that we do a pretty fair job with what we've got, But to others who are thinking about a project, my advice is to don't bite off more than you can chew. We have quite a lot of experience with the Bay of Fundy. We were doing some research before we actually started the Waterkeeper Project and worked to, prevent salt marsh loss and get restoration. And we actually, before Waterkeeper, we had begun our work on the Musquash Marine Protected Area. So, we had a good handle. So we weren't, starting out of, as people, with no research, although we started out as people with no money and are virtually people with no money now. I mean, we have a very small population around here and no local foundations or anything, very much. So, we operate, on a very low budget, but we have a lot of knowledge, if you know what I mean.
Well, right. Well, it sounds like lean and mean.
We're not out doing, work. Usually our work is quite, we know the situation we're going to find before we go there, and, we know what's required to do it. We're not, working in ignorance.
Do you get any sign that there may become a baykeeper for the Nova Scotia side of the Bay of Fundy? Annapolis,
well,
there
could be. I mean, there are certainly people there working on issues related to the marine environment, but it hasn't appeared yet. Now, there is another Waterkeeper project in New Brunswick here at the head of the Bay of Fundy on the New Brunswick side.
Oh, really?
There's a Petit Kodiak River Waterkeeper, and what they're doing is they've been working to restore the health of a river and an estuary called the Petit Kodiak, which, in the past it had large runs of salmon and shad and gaspereau and smelt and all these fishes. And there was a causeway, a dam put across this river. Well, basically, it was for a traffic bridge to the other side in the 1960s, and it virtually eliminated all these fish runs from that river, and it ended up in changing that river from a riverbed, probably a third of a mile wide or even a mile wide in places to, just a few hundred yards from the, siltation that built up afterwards. And there was a natural wonder there called the tidal bore. Of course, the tides at the head of the Bay of Fundy are very high. And when the tide came in every day, the river didn't gradually fill up, but this big wave came up of 2 meters or more high, just as a tidal wave, and it was a unique natural phenomenon. And the siltation of the river after this dam was built, ended that.
Has that dam been taken down, or is it still there?
It's still there, but the Petit Kodiak Riverkeeper, that has been the main focus that they've had, is getting that dam removed from their river. And they've been fighting to get the proper environmental studies done and doing a lot of work themselves and getting a government decision to remove it. And, of course, they've been working on that for several years, and just within the last few months, the government's environmental assessment has said that it has to be removed, but it hasn't been removed yet. But it will be now.
Well, it takes time, but it took time for the Musquash MPA, and so these things can happen.
I think a lot of people, when you were talking about people setting up projects, and I think a lot of people assume that very quickly they can bring about change, but I think it really does take a commitment. And sometimes we're finding that even to settle smaller things usually takes, about 5 years or so to accomplish anything. And many of these larger things we've been working on, like getting a diminishment in the aquaculture debris, the industrial debris from that took us about 5 years. And we're just, starting to get a major cleanup of that now. We've been trying to get an old fish plant that's been falling down cleaned up, and we've been working at that for 2 or 3 years and haven't got that done yet. It took us 8 years for the marine protected area. So I think if people are looking at getting major changes, you really have to count yourself that you're going to be around and going to be in the picture, at least for 10 years.
Huh. Well, we've been talking with David Thompson, the Fundy Baykeeper. Dave, we're going to have to take off now, unfortunately. And what is a way for people to track the goings-on? Is there a website for those
Yes, there is. And I'll just give you the number of that. It's www.fundybaykeeper.org.
www.fundybaykeeper.org.
That's correct.
Okay, there'll be a photograph of perhaps of you and the vessel and all the information about what's going on.
A lot of pictures of the Bay of Fundy and a lot about the work that's been done and being done.
All right, well, keep up the good work then, and thank you very much for being on.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. And that was David Thompson, Conservation Council New Brunswick's Fundy Baykeeper.